I was in a band, like not the school band, but friends who were in a rock band from the age of about 14. And as soon as we formed, we all knew that we wanted to be in the biggest band ever. And I was pretty good academically at school, and I always thought I should get the marks to do law.
Yeah.
And I did. And so I knew what I wanted to study, but it was really so that I could go and study whilst rehearsing the band to get a record contract. And so I chose arts law because it had the least hours.
That was it.
That was my decision. Yeah.
Okay. So after you did your undergrad, or during your undergrad, you got signed in.
We got a deal with an Australian record company called Alberts, who are, I guess, are best known for being AC/DC's publisher, and loads of big bands during the 60s, 70s, 80s, Easy Beats, Love Is in the Air. Lots of hits from the 70s and 80s all went through Alberts. And so we went over. Our manager became the head of the record label that they were setting up in the UK. And so we were there from 93 to 98, which is pretty much the start and end of Britpop. Okay. So it was a great time to be there.
And what did your band actually play? Like, what kind of band were you?
We were a four-piece guitar band, so it was a sort of Led Zeppelin-esque.
The first thing you say four piece, I was thinking the Eagles. Actually,
we weren't that good. we were good, but we no four part harmonies. Yeah. So we were a rock band. We were a little bit out of kilter with Britpop, because we were a bit heavier. I guess we weren't quite as poppy as a lot of those bands.
So for 5 years, what were you doing?
We were recording. We were playing gigs, and that in the end, the reason why the band broke up was because we spent too long in the recording and pre-production process, and all went slightly insane, and left the company, record company, in the end. So that was the sort of cause of the split.
So until this point, you've gone to uni as kind of like a sideline while you're in your band,
yeah.
And then you did find some success. You got signed,
yeah.
And then you came back and did an MBA.
Yeah,
when
the band broke up, and I guess I'm going to put a coffee table book together one day called The Road to Nowhere. There's plenty of content of bands that got signed and didn't get through. There's a lot of us out there. But when the band broke up and I came back to Australia, I didn't know what I wanted to do at that point. I'd been in that band for 12 years with those guys, and I didn't have a burning desire to go straight into another band. I didn't want to work in the record industry. I would rather have been an artist than work in the record industry. So I was actually working at the Co-op bookshop here at Sydney University and UTS for a month or two, trying to work out what to do. And I accidentally got recruited by IBM. My girlfriend at the time was working at Drake at the recruiting company, and we went out to dinner one night with a guy who recruited for IBM, and he asked me about my past, and I told him about the arts law that I'd studied, and I was actually taking accounting at UTS at that time because I figured I needed some form of business education. Yeah. And he said, I think I'll probably get you some more money than what they're paying you at the Co-op bookshop. No offense to the, which was a fantastic place to work. So I ended up working at IBM for 9 years. So it's what you call a right-hand turn after my music career.
I can't imagine what you would have been qualified for at IBM with an arts, law, and some accounting background.
That's right. I think that's IBM's hiring policy. I mean, and in the end, I was doing really doing sales. That's what they're looking for. So I was part of their global financing division, which is basically IBM's bank. I were we were structuring leasing deals for Telstra. So rather than them paying for their IT upfront, it would, we'd structure leasing deals for them. So
then,
very sexy.
Then you wanted to do an MBA.
So I started working with them, and they I wanted to do an MBA, and they were happy to put me through it. Because I'd never had any formal business education. Obviously, with the arts part of the law, there's not a lot of business.
But what is it that did you need the MBA to continue? Did you view it as a way of getting a bit further in your career at IBM? Was that the impetus?
My motivation the whole time was to educate myself on the business front, and then when the right opportunity came along that could somehow tap into my passion for music, I just didn't know what that looked like at that point. The IBM, me being with IBM was more of a self-education. I mean, I worked very hard for them, and I think they liked the results that they got from me, but my personal motives were more to educate myself. After about 6 months, when I came back from the UK and I was a bit defeated after the band split up and locked the Les Paul and the Fender in the closet for about 6 months. After a while, you can only keep the passion down for so long, and I started playing music again, and I was writing songs with different artists around Sydney. So I did some work with the guys from Skunk Hour. And Tim Poles, who is the drummer with The Church, I was doing a lot of work with. And I was introduced to Peter Morris, who is the singer of two of Paul Mac's number one hits. And Peter's a great front person. And I was working with her on her solo efforts. And whilst we were working together, Paul Mac was asked to go up to Arnhem Land by Yothu Yindi as part of their Garma Festival.
Wow.
And each year, at the Garma Festival, a couple of known songwriter, producer, artists are asked to go up as part of that festival and hold songwriting workshops with the Indigenous kids up there. And I think Paul was producing Silverchair at that time, so he couldn't go. So Paul and Peter were going to go up. Paul couldn't go, so I went instead. And so I had a week of working with groups of around sort of 10 to 15 Indigenous teenagers where I'd have them for 2 hours. Peter and I would have them for 2 hours, and the brief was to, write a song. And the first session that we did, the Today Show were there filming. They had these big cameras, I'm not a front man, I'm a songwriter, guitar player, keyboard player, and I'm not a spotlight sort of guy.
Mm.
And I had 2 hours and 15 teenagers in a room, and we had to create a song from scratch. And I'd never written a song to a brief or to a time restriction before. You're in a band, you write a song when you feel like writing a song.
Yeah. Not on the spot.
No, not which is very Nashville way of brill building. There are lots of famous songs that were written in those conditions, but not in a rock band in Sydney or London. So we had 2 hours and a lot of pressure with the TV show, with the morning show filming it as well. And we basically came up with a process where we asked the kids, does anyone know a few chords on the guitar? And one of the kids knew a couple of chords, and so he'd play an E and an A, and then we'd say, well, what do you want? What style do you want the song to be? And so we asked the kids what music they like, and most of these kids liked a blend of heavy metal, hip hop and country music. Very, very strange combination. All three styles, which I like as well. So we wrote some heavy metal songs and some Islander songs and some country songs and some rap. And then for the lyrics, we just got the kids to write these poems about their stories. So it might be, fishing in the river with their grandpa, or things that they've been up to with their cousins, or whatever it was, but it was their story, and we just take their story and put them into these basically rhyming couplets, and then get them to sing them over the chords that their friend came up with on the guitar, and we'd create these songs. And because Peter and I are professional musicians, we could tweak them slightly to make them sound like real songs. And so by the end of the, as soon as we started putting some of their words over the music, you could see them get hooked. There's this sort of magical moment where it's like, wow, we're writing a song. We're going to be famous.
And this is before, what is it? Like all of the apps you can get on your phones.
GarageBand.
Yeah, GarageBand.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays you can kind of get that experience by yourself, whereas this was way before that.
Yeah, this was 2003, which doesn't feel like that. So, yeah, and that was, that feeling of when I was in a band as a 13, 14-year-old and we write a song, you get this rush out of writing the song. It is a pretty special feeling. And these kids got that feeling, and I could see them. And teenagers, they can be pretty pretty scary, teenagers, and just going through this process with them, they loved it. You know, teenagers, there's only so many ways you can connect with them. You know, music and sport are probably the two best ways to do it, and so this songwriting process really worked. And so I did that for a week, and then when I came back to Sydney, a friend of mine who has a company in Sydney with about 50 employees asked if I could do that with his sales team as a team building experience. And I, you know, team building for me was a pretty dirty word, even though I'd been at IBM for 9 years. When they wheeled us off to the team building experiences, I was usually the guy who ducked out the back,
What were the, because I'm imagining like going bowling or something.
Yeah, and they would do, at worst, you know, going bowling's okay, a few drinks and do some bowling. They would do, there's usually some form of activity, like a, you know, you have to paint something, or you have to, or some sort of physical activity, or there are some good ones out there, but most of them are fairly patronizing, and you feel like you're in a bad episode of the Office. Yeah. So I was, when he asked me, I was a bit hesitant, and I'm not a drum circle guy, I'm not a sort of kumbaya guy, but I said, look, I can take them into a recording studio, which I think would be fun.
Yeah.
And bring in some great musicians, including Peter, and some top session musicians. So it sort of distracts them from the fact that it's a team building event. And so we took them into a studio in Balmain, Damien Gerard's. I'm not sure if it's there anymore. And, you know, spent 3 hours creating a song and recording it. And they loved it. And then company started asking me to do it. So Commonwealth Bank was my next client, and then Virgin. And so that was, yeah, we've been going for 13 years, and we now do it in, we've done it in 22 countries. It really all comes back to that same experience, that magical experience of creating a song from nothing with people that didn't know that they could do it. You know, at the start of the session, everyone's like, I'm going to have to sing on my own, which goes two ways. If people are told they're going to write a song, there are two responses. One response is they have a coronary, because they think they have to, you know, it's petrifying. And I'm that guy. I don't want to get picked out of an audience. And the other half are, it's their big break. Get me up on stage. So you get both responses.
There are plenty of insanely talented people out there who may not have any idea they have that much talent. So you must have some incredible stories of just people going, wow.
There's always talent. Most of those people know they've got it, though. Okay. I don't think I can't remember a specific occasion where someone didn't know they could sing and just suddenly belted out a song like Aretha Franklin. They generally know, but there are some amazing musicians out there, you know, with it, who are working. You know, there are plenty of people who are in a band at school and were almost going to make it, and then end up working for PwC. Like, there's some talented people out there. They're never going to outgun the musicians that are there to help, because the, you know, session musicians are the best of the best, and they're very professional in it. So it's fun, you know, for those people that do have talent that we come across, they get to flex their skills with a top band.
In front of their colleagues.
So they love it. So it works, you know, for people who do have talent, there's something in it for them, and for those that don't, they get to create this song.
But when you're going into, like, I view songwriting as kind of a personal experience, or, you know, you're generally reliving some encounter or want to say something. But when you're creating a collaborative song with people who you go to work with, is there really that much room for that kind of expression? Like, what kind of songs do they come up with?
With the corporate events that we're doing, we're brought into usually an event that is being put on for a specific purpose. So, for example, it might be a national sales meeting for Microsoft. So you've got, you know, what their goals are for the next year, what their challenges are. So it's not really trying to express themselves on an emotional level. It's trying to capture the content of the business and put it into a song.